Hello and welcome to History for Weirdos.
We are your hosts, Andrew
and Stephanie,
and each week we're going to take you on a journey into the strange, obscure, and relentlessly entertaining corners of human history.
Now listen up, friends, because it's about to get weird. My name is Stephanie.
Oh, and I'm Andrew.
And this is the History for Weirdos podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening today. We know that we didn't put out an episode last week because we had some like really dumb adulting things that were very pressing that we had to deal with.
Yes, I know. That's like one of the more unfortunate things about being an adult.
Yeah.
Adulting. I don't like it.
It stinks, but it has to be done. And we're super excited to, well, I'm really excited.
I am as well.
For this week's episode because I actually have, like, zero idea what you're going to talk about.
Yeah, all I've kind of told you is that, like, it has something to do with Arctic exploration, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's definitely weirder than that. So, weirdos, it goes way deeper. It goes all the way to the top!
It goes all the way to the
top. All the way to the top!
Is the Arctic at the top or at the bottom?
It is at the top.
There you go.
And I didn't even actually... Funny enough, it's a triple entendre.
Okay.
There's another, I was referencing something else, which I will tell you later.
Ooh, yes. Very exciting.
All the way to the top in another aspect.
That's awesome.
Yes. And you know what? This is actually a special episode. You know why?
Why?
This is, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first episode that we've gotten from a fan.
Yes, a fan suggestion.
By a fan, I mean one of my very good friends, Kevin, who is also... one of my groomsmen in my wedding, in our wedding.
In our wedding.
In my wedding. You weren't there.
Was I even invited?
I don't know. Technically, you weren't invited.
Yeah.
Because you were the host.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much to Kevin in advance for recommending this story.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Kevin.
Do you want to jump right in and tell me what's going on?
Yes. Well, before I do that, I'm going to also cite my sources because
That's a part of it.
Yeah.
It's not separate. That's a part of telling your story.
Yes, I know, I know. But I wanted to say it because I know I don't want, like, Levi, when you're listening to this, I don't want you making fun of me. Stephanie, you're not going to make fun of me. I'm going to cite my sources and you can't make fun of me anymore.
We are absolutely going to make fun of you in so many different ways.
Yeah, that's true. But you can't make fun of me in this way. And that's all that matters.
Okay, babe, you get this one.
I get this one. Yes, I get a win. So... Kevin obviously gave me the idea for this, but my sources are twofold. Mm-hmm. I have, of course, handy-dandy Wikipedia, because of course, and then also our handy-dandy National Geographic History.
Yeah, we subscribe.
We subscribe now.
To Nat Geo History, and it's actually super cool.
I recommend it. I mean, every single article is, like, super crisp. They do have very obscure kind of things, too.
It's pretty weird.
It's not surface level at all. I really, really like this.
Yeah.
This is one of our best subscriptions probably ever.
Oh, absolutely.
So this one had a whole in-depth article about Arctic explorations. Okay. So I'm only going to be highlighting one. Oh, really? A couple, but very surface level at that.
Yeah.
So if you want more in-depth articles on Arctic exploration, I highly recommend this periodical.
Cool.
Really good. Really good.
That's awesome.
So I'm going to open this up with a question for you.
Sure.
What does a mid-19th century seagoing vessel that got stuck in the Arctic have in common with a desk that some of the most powerful men on the planet over the last 25, 30, 40 years even have in common, Stephanie?
Is it like the same wood?
I'm going to get to that. And that's actually surprisingly a really good guess. So screw you. I'm going home. I did that in the wrong voice.
Screw you, I'm going home.
Oh, okay.
Yes, there you go. So, well, you kind of just ruined that, so thanks for your guess. I shouldn't have asked that question, that was all me. Yeah, also, as a quick aside, like, Stephanie's really good at guessing, like, the plots of movies, like, before we even watch them.
Aw,
so,
thanks, babe.
I'm not going to ruin the surprise ending. It wasn't a surprise to Stephanie, mind you, but in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we were walking in the theater, she's like, oh, this is what happens. And I was like... Wow, that's a really good guess. Okay, let's just see. And of course, the last like 20 minutes of the movie, that's exactly what happened. I was like, how the hell did you know?
I think I would like to just say that I'm smarter than everyone else.
That's but probably true.
That's probably not true. I think this is a plug for reading more. I think I read a lot, and so I'm really good at spotting like patterns and stories and stuff like that. Because we should all read more. I'm still not convinced that you know how to read.
I don't.
But yeah, read more books. Read books, read magazines, periodicals, newspapers, whatever. Just read more. It's good for you. It's good for your brain. It'll make you a more interesting person. It'll make you probably a kinder, better person. Just read more.
Yeah. The okay. End. And that's our plug from the Department of Education.
That's my TED Talk.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Okay, okay. Now back to the real story here. Uh-huh. So I'm going to tell you the story of a ship called the HMS Resolute.
Okay.
This was originally a merchant ship that was named the, I can't, it's like P-T-A-R-M-I-G-A-N, this word.
Whoa, I have
the
no idea.
The Ptarmigan. Let's just call it that.
Uh-huh, Ptarmigan. It's like pterodactyl.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just Ptarmigan?
Ptarmigan, yeah, that might be it.
Okay.
So, and it was purchased by the British government in 1850. Mm-hmm. And the reason why this purchase happened was because the British government was trying to find a lost ship headed by a man by the name of Sir John Franklin, who set out to find the ever-elusive Northwest Passage.
Right.
And this was, you know,
that
I think...
That was super trendy back then.
Yeah, 1845, I believe, was when he set out. And, but, you know, unfortunately, spoiler alert, it didn't exist back then. Ironically enough, because of... you know, climate change and whatnot, it might exist now, but and then our technology doesn't matter. Our ships can just plow through the ice. So.
Right. What was, that's a part of the search for the Northwest Passage is a big part of the plot in Frankenstein.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, Frankenstein's like a story within a story within a story, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's like the first sort of frame in the story is the search for the Northwest Passage.
Right, the outermost frame.
Yeah, why was that such a popular, like, quest for people? So, do you know?
Yes, I actually do. Mm. So, if you think about it, like, when we look at a map of the world, it's like, it's not super accurate, right? Because yeah. We're taking a globe and then trying to put it into, like, a rectangle.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you imagine, like, the globe, you can go technically from, like, it's hard to conceptualize in my head, but essentially you could go across the world in much shorter times because instead of just going, you know, east and then, or west and then like, you know, going south to avoid continents or whatnot, you could just kind of shoot across and then get to the other side of the world really quickly. Now we have airplanes, so it's a moot point.
Right.
But that was huge back then because you could cut down on travel time and then, you know, get goods to the other side of the world much quicker.
Okay, but I feel like it was very romanticized also.
It was.
So, like, it started, the root of it was like, this will be more efficient. Is there a way to do this? And then I probably, when people started looking and they're like, wait, is there a way to do this or is this not feasible? Then it became like a who's the coolest person
that can
find the Northwest Passage.
I think it's also, yeah, like, it's like, you know, the new age of discovery for them. Or the new, you know.
Their version of just, yeah.
Exactly.
It's this idea of adventure. Of something new, world that hasn't been touched really by humans.
Yeah, like the new world is already more or less like figured out by this point. They're like, there's nowhere else on the globe. Like, why don't we go north?
So this was like primarily then like a Western European thing to do.
Oh, for sure.
An American. North American.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So where was I? Oh, yes, that's right. So this ship... So we're going, let's go back to the HMS Resolute.
Uh-huh.
This ship, it set sail in 1850 to try to find this the ill-fated expedition of Sir John Franklin. So unbeknownst to anyone outside the Franklin expedition, unfortunately, everyone at this point had already died.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they never found the actual ship. Only evidence of places where it had been. Like, for example, Beechey Island, which is in the present-day Canadian Arctic.
Beechey Island?
Beechey Island.
Okay.
I don't think it was very beachy. It was probably very cold.
It was probably very icy.
Yeah, very icy. The ship returned the following year and published some articles in the Illustrated Arctic News, which was a periodical back then.
Of course it was.
I know.
How old-timey.
I read that and I was like, of course, this is like a mid-19th century, like,
yes,
like magazine.
Sitting in a leather armchair, smoking your pipe, reading the Arctic periodical.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a vibe.
Absolutely. Such a vibe. Such a vibe. So that was kind of, nothing really happened of it. However, the second expedition set sail in April of 1852, and it would be the last major effort to locate Franklin because of what would come to pass.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay.
Over the next year and some months, their search would be in vain, and unfortunately, they would never find Franklin or his remains. Even to this day, we don't. We know Franklin died. We actually found his diary. He died.
Really?
He died in 1847. They even have the exact date of when he died, but we never found, because we found like on, it was either on Beachy Island or like one of the surrounding things. We found, it was either his diary or like someone's writings, and someone wrote like, oh, this day. Oh, it must not have been his diary.
Yeah,
it was someone else.
He's not like, died today.
Exactly. Today I died. Sad face. So someone else wrote that he died that day. It was like April 11th, 1847, something like that.
What a bummer.
I know. So unfortunately, even the first expedition, they wouldn't,
that's crazy.
It was in vain.
And no, was anyone's remains found?
Yeah, they found even some burial plots.
Okay.
Yeah, and they spoke to some Inuits, and they knew of, like,
these dumbass people that came and died.
Pretty much, yeah. Unfortunately.
That were like, what are you doing here? You don't know how to survive.
Exactly. It's like, guys, this is a terrible idea. Don't do this. Your ships are not, like, the technology just wasn't there.
Yeah, and the Inuit people had been there forever.
And lo and behold, guess what happens? Hmm. Ironic twist of fate. So they get stuck in the ice. So that's right. August 1853. So like still really early, you know, that's like
Jesus.
Yeah. Or August. I mean, like, it's like summertime still.
Oh, okay. I thought you were referencing like the technology they would have had then.
Oh yeah. No.
To be so, like, we could do it now.
You know, exactly. No, I mean, this is during this expedition. So like the Resolute gets trapped during in ice. And by April 1854, they're still trapped in ice. So this is months. So this is like half a year. By this point, they'd been out, you know, they'd set sail for 2 years at this point. So, and they are still stuck in ice, and at this point, Belcher, it doesn't look like it's going to be letting up anytime soon. Belcher orders the ship to be abandoned, and they escape on two relief ships.
Belcher is the captain of
Of this one.
And it took almost a year of them being stuck in ice before they decided to abandon ship.
Yeah.
Wow.
So...
Can you imagine being stuck in ice for, like, months and months and months?
Yeah, so, like, August to April. I mean, so that means they, like, saw the end of summer, they saw all of fall, all of winter, and then into spring.
Wow.
And it's still not letting up.
I wonder, they must have had so many supplies ready to go.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they were well-provisioned.
Okay.
They had years of supplies on them.
Okay.
Just in case, you know, they met someone else, right?
What a nightmare, though.
Yeah, it really is. So, the story does not end here, obviously.
Right.
Because this would be pretty unremarkable. Yeah. Exactly. Very unremarkable. But this is just where the weirdness starts to begin. Mm-hmm. And it only ramps up with every twist and turn.
Okay.
So, the ship was found adrift and in actual near-perfect condition by an American whaler by the name of James...
I thought you were going to say an American whale.
An American whale.
I was like, how cool, the whale finds them.
That's right, baby.
And,
of course he's American.
Yeah. Yeah, like, how'd you know he's American? He's waving a little American flag.
Yeah, he's like,
in his blowhole. Yeah.
Yankee doodle, bitch.
So an American whale finds them.
Yeah, an American whale. By the name of James Buddington, because he's
a
buddy.
Good name for a whale.
That would be a good name for a whale.
James Buddington?
James Buddington.
No, but he's American.
But he's American, so he's like, I'm James Buddington.
America.
America.
Uh-huh.
Hashtag America. You know, hashtag wouldn't come around for another 150 years. America.
Right.
So, this whale, but in actuality, a whaler.
Okay.
Split.
I know it's not a whale.
Split his crew between his ship and the Resolute, and sailed both ships actually safely back to harbor in Connecticut. And ironically, the name of the harbor was called New London.
Oh wow!
Yeah, funny enough. And he arrived on Christmas Eve, 1855.
That's nice.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a nice little Christmas present.
Yeah, like a little Christmas miracle.
Exactly. And as a gesture of goodwill, actually, the American government fixed it up, or Congress specifically fixed it up, and sent it back to Britain as a gesture of good faith to Queen Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah. And the Resolute. Very cordial. Very cordial. And the Resolute would serve in the British Navy for another 23 years, but would be retired and salvaged for timber in 1879. So at this point, like, kind of an interesting story so far.
Yeah.
Like, this is pretty cool.
Right.
I like, you know, the ship ironically went to go find someone, then was lost, and then found again, and then, like, returned to Britain and, you know, served in the Navy.
Yeah.
And, you know, did its thing for another 23 years.
The ship itself had multiple lives.
Yeah, exactly. And if this story ended here, I think it would be kind of interesting. However, the story does not end here.
Okay. Where does it end? Tell me.
Oh, I'm not going to tell you.
Just get to it.
No, I will. So, you may ask, now, what was done with this timber? Some of it was used to make desks. So, three desks were actually made from this, and one of them was actually the desk of the President of the United States in the Oval Office.
I never would have guessed that.
So, in fact,
that's really cool, though.
Yes, the main desk, it's called the Resolute Desk, and was given to President Rutherford B. Hayes in 1880.
Rutherford B. Hayes.
One of my favorite American presidents, not because of anything he did. I know very little about what he did.
I don't know anything about him.
But just because of his name, man. Rutherford B. Hayes.
It sounds like an American president.
Yes. Oh, Rutherford B. Hayes here.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the scoop, all right. It's going to be my fist.
He's a journalist and a boxer and president.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much like Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes.
Maybe he wasn't a journalist, but he was a boxer.
That's true.
Yeah. He messed people up.
Yeah.
Anyways, so going back to our boy Rutherford B. Hayes.
Yes.
He was given to him as a desk, or as a gift, I mean, and he kept it in the office. But, like, it wasn't, like, the official presidential desk. I think it's not really said, but at one point, it becomes the official presidential desk, and FDR has it as his.
In fact,
he gives it an improvement, and I'm using air quotes, because, you know, traditional desks, you know, there's, like, see-through at the bottom, right? Like, there's, like, the...
What do you mean see-through?
Like, there's, you know, like, a place where you can kind of, like, stick your feet out, right? Like, when you think of a desk, there's, like... I mean, it's hollow, like, underneath, right?
Oh, hollow, yeah, not see-through. There's a crevice.
Yeah, and you can see through it because there's no wood there or anything. So...
He put it back on it or something?
Yeah, so he put a little door on it because during the 30s, he had, you know, of course he had polio and he was affected by it, and he had crutches and he didn't want anyone to see it. His C's like crutches or his leg braces.
Yeah.
It was too bad.
I know that it was just a very different time in regards to, like, politics and the press and stuff, because I remember, like, in elementary school, like, a history teacher talking to us about FDR and his bout of polio and ending up in a wheelchair, all of those things. And the history teacher, she pointed out that you will not find pictures of the president doing, like, presidential things and transferring in and out of his wheelchair. Just... Not that there's, you know, anything wrong with being in one. I think people were just respectful of, like, the press was respectful of this vulnerable moment for the leader of the United States to be transferring in and out of his wheelchair. And she made the point of saying, like, the press isn't like that anymore. Like, nothing's off limits to people these days.
It's a really good point. No, absolutely. And I think especially to add to that, like, it was... You know, he was president during the 30s, so that was, of course, the Great Depression. And then 1941 rolls around, we enter World War II.
Right.
And so, like, he's president, you know, through 1945, and, you know, unfortunately for him, he dies. So, yeah, he was just, like, his entire presidency was marked by, like, tumultuous events.
It was like, wow.
It's not like he could just be, you know, like, chilling, like, you know, everything's going fine.
No, like, nothing was going fine.
No, nothing.
At any point in time,
like,
for him.
Economically and then militarily, like, nothing was going well.
I know.
I mean, you
know. That's probably why he's so beloved when we speak of him still. And obviously, like, Eleanor Roosevelt.
That's so true. Loved. Yeah, that's absolutely. That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. So he added, he made an improvement.
He made an improvement. And it actually, I mean, an improvement's still there to this day. There's a presidential, like, seal. So it looks good.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it actually does look, if you compare the old desk versus the new desk, it does look cooler.
Okay.
So give him that.
It really was improvement. I'll try to see if I can find a picture of that to post on our Instagram.
Yeah, definitely. You can see there is a picture of the desk taken in 1899, mm-hmm. so obviously before the improvement, where I believe it's not the president, but it's someone else, an ambassador,
mm-hmm.
signing papers that ended the Spanish-American War.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, on the desk.
On the desk, that's the wood from the ship. Wow, that's really
cool. That went set out to find another ship.
That was like, whoops, I got lost.
Yeah, got stuck in ice. Like, trying to find a ship that also got stuck in ice.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, just some weird events.
Very cool.
But, actually, well, it's kind of cooler, though, is like, it stepped up in popularity over the years. So
The desk,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I think JFK used it as his desk. But,
really?
Yeah. Wow. But unfortunately, he was obviously assassinated.
Uh-huh.
And afterwards, I don't, LBJ gave it to the Smithsonian or something.
Okay.
And went on tour to, like, you know, around the country, people, uh-huh. you know, were saying, oh, this is the desk that JFK really? Used and all that. Yeah.
The desk had a tour?
Yes. It's part of his personal, the JFK personal effects.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's just one of the cool. things. Like, yeah.
It's like a little rock star desk.
It really is. And it only gets crazier because Jimmy Carter called it back and used it as his desk starting in 1977. And every single president since then, even including now Donald Trump, has used that desk as their official desk, with the exception of George H.W. Bush, who used it as, like, an auxiliary desk, but still in the White House.
That's so interesting.
Now Trump, then, you know, before Obama, Bush, Clinton, Bush, you know, not Bush Sr.,
uh-huh.
This is before Bush, Reagan, mm-hmm. and then Carter all used it as their Oval Office desk.
That is insane.
Yeah.
And then, so not LBJ.
Yeah, LBJ didn't. So
not Bush Sr. and not LBJ.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. LBJ didn't use it at all, but Bush Sr. used it, but just not, like, it was still in the White House, just use it on an auxiliary desk.
Okay. That is so interesting.
I know. I never thought, like, a desk would ever interest me, but I'm like, wow, this is actually really cool.
That is so cool.
Also, it's been featured. I know, I kind of do too. It's like, should I be elected president just so I can use this
desk? We just, like, drive up in, like, a U-Haul.
Yeah.
We put the desk in the back and then we're like, okay, that's it. That's all we wanted.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Govern yourselves. You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, bye. And it's been in many pop culture references, but none so prominently as the masterpiece of cinema that is National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets.
No way!
Yes.
The desk is in National Treasure 2?
It is.
So it is a rock star desk.
It really is. I mean, Nick Cage. Finds a hidden compartment in the desk that, surprisingly, no other president that has ever used this desk, so pretty smart men,
mm-hmm.
has ever found. Well, you know, I
sometimes
mean... Sometimes smart. Yeah. But... maybe savvy. I mean, to be elected president, you have to have...
Maybe rich?
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Uh-huh. But
Nick Cage
outsmarts all presidents, including, you know, all the ones I just mentioned.
That's believable, though.
Believable,
I mean, it's National Treasure, too, but Nick Cage is really just America's treasure.
That's true, he is.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick Cage finds a hidden compartment, and there's something written on it that something, 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 you know,
I don't remember the last time I watched either of the National Treasures.
It's been a while for me. I'm pretty sure Phil Dunphy from Modern Family is in that movie as well.
Oh, really? I didn't catch that.
He's in the second one.
As considering that we have a podcast called History for Weirdos, we need to review National Treasure 1 and 2 because those are, like...
That's absolutely true.
Very, very reliable historical sources.
Of course. I mean, is there...
So much material is waiting for us.
Is there a Knights Templar / Mason?
Uh-huh, Freemason.
Freemason, thank you. Freemason, like, absurdly large treasure hidden somewhere in the United States? 100% true. Yeah,
100%.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, now I really want to watch that.
I know, I do too.
Okay,
we should have a viewing party. Also Sean Bean's like the bad guy in the first one. I mean, can it get better?
Oh, Sean Bean, and he doesn't die.
He does not die.
Good for Sean Bean.
He doesn't die.
He manages to keep a character alive.
I think he gets arrested, but does not die.
Yeah, that's great. I can't believe this desk, this same desk, went from the Stuck in Ice expedition to, like, National Treasure 2.
I know. It's just gone up in the world.
Like, the wood of the desk, obviously. Yes, it's only gone up from there.
I know. Isn't that really cool?
That is so cool. What would be, like, a next step up for the desk? Like, what would be the next cool thing?
Space.
Space.
It's used in a spaceship.
It's a spaceship desk.
Yeah, somehow it defies, like, the law of gravity and can, like, go through, you know, outer space without burning up in the atmosphere.
Oh my gosh, we gotta get Richard Branson on it. I bet if Richard Branson's listening to our podcast, which I'm, like, sure he is.
If he isn't, like, how dare him?
Yeah.
How dare he?
Yeah, no, he's totally listening. Hi.
What's up, Richard?
He's gonna hear this story about the desk and he's gonna make it his mission to get into space, so...
That would be really cool.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, or Elon Musk. Maybe they can have a competition.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh. Challenge has been thrown down, you
Virgin
two.
Galactic versus SpaceX.
Damn.
All right, guys.
You guys heard it here first.
I know. I was just about to say that.
History for Weirdos, the award-winning podcast, has just announced.
And by award-winning, I mean we gave ourselves an award.
We give ourselves an award every time we, like, follow through and are able to, like, post an episode.
Exactly.
So award-winning podcast is just announced.
Whoever can take the HMS Resolute desk all the way to outer space wins.
Wins.
Our eternal gratitude.
And they get to hang out for a whole day with our corgi Stella.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Yes. Well, that's all I have on this desk.
That is so cool.
But yeah, I just thought, I'm like, you know, first of all, thank you, Kevin. Like, this was such a weird, like, story.
That is so weird.
This is definitely, like, he's now, like, an official, like, weirdo.
Yeah.
Kevin, you're a weirdo.
I love this story because it's so whimsical.
It is. It's very whimsical.
And everyone needs a little more whimsy in their lives.
Yeah, you know what? This is definitely... Like, I think a prime example of busting this out at, like, a dinner party.
Yeah, that's a good, like, especially when you're, like, if you're eating dinner with, like, your relatives that, like, aren't the chillest people in the world. It's, like, such a nice, neutral topic to bring up is, like, well, have you heard about this desk?
Yes. That can be maybe it's a good pickup line. If you're at a bar, be like, hey. You know what? Have you ever heard of the Resolute desk in the White House? Well, because let me tell you.
If not, I'm about to blow your mind.
Yes. Well, you know what's kind of funny is, people at work now ask me, like, they'll just be like, hey, Andrew, give me a random historical fact.
Oh, really?
Yes, because of this podcast.
That's so nice. I've had my lovely friends will, like, send me weird history, like, things they see or, like, quirky books or like, historical decor. Anything that looks old-timey and, like, peculiar,
mm-hmm.
I get sent that, so I always appreciate it. If you guys find any weird history stuff that you think we'd find interesting, send us a picture, leave us a comment, whatever, because we really do. It, like, just makes us so happy to know that people think of us when they see weird things.
Yes, I know. I love it.
Yes.
You love it. Yeah, and definitely if you want to, you know, have your name on our podcast, a really good way to do that.
Then that way,
sending us a
Richard Branson and Elon Musk will both know your name then. Because they are huge fans.
Huge.
Aww.
Sorry.
Hopefully he's not a fan. Unsubscribe.
You're fired. I can't do the voice. But anyways.
Thank gosh you can. Well, thank you so much, babe, for telling me about probably, like, literally the coolest desk in the world.
Yeah, no, 100% the coolest desk. I cannot think of any desk cooler than this.
Yeah, if anyone else knows of a cooler desk, we'd actually be really, really interested to know.
I mean, used by many presidents, or multiple presidents, and went to the Arctic.
I'm gonna, when we're done recording, I'm gonna ask Google what's the coolest desk in the world. Should we ask her now?
They don't say the Resolute desk.
I'm going to ask her now. Hey, Google, what's the coolest desk in the world? Wow.
We found a list on the website thetrendspotter.net. 35 cool desks for your home office.
Hey, Google, stop. Oh, she doesn't want to stop.
Hey, Google, stop. You just need a firm voice.
She wasn't helpful. So I think this proves that you have the coolest desk in the world.
I win. I win.
Well, thank you so much, babe. And thank you, weirdos, for listening. Thanks for being so understanding about last week. And we hope to not have that happen again. We absolutely love sharing our weird history stories with you all and connecting over the peculiar things that we love.
That's true. And of course, you can always find us at historyforweirdos@gmail.com
yeah.
if you want to email us. Also, find us on social.
Mm-hmm. At historyforweirdos.
Yeah, in both Instagram and Twitter.
Correct.
And then TikTok, still trying to figure that out. We will upload content at some point in the future on yeah. TikTok.
Stay tuned.
It's at @history_4_weirdos.
Mm-hmm. And thank you guys so much. Bye, weirdos.
Adios, weirdos.